Hello, and welcome to Ready for the Right Guy. This is year four of this event, and I'm so thrilled and excited to have you here with me, where I've partnered with some of the world's top love, dating, and relationship experts to help you invite, inspire, and ignite love and passion with your Mr. Right. I'm your host, Michelle Marchant Johnson, and I'm so excited to have our guest here with us today because I know you're just going to love her and what she has to share. She's a returning favorite. And so I'd like to welcome you back, Deborah. Deborah Moorhead is our guest.
Wonderful. Thank you, Michelle, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I know we're going to have a fun conversation. It will help a lot of women today. The theme of our conversation is the four C's to turn conflict into connection. Yes. So I know this is going to be really interesting, and I can't wait to hear what the four C's are.
That's right.
But before we get started, just a little introduction about Deborah. Imagine having the relationship you have always desired. After being stood up on her 30th birthday by her drug-addicted boyfriend, Deborah Moorhead was determined to figure out this relationship stuff, and she did. Along with her 20 years experience as a therapist and her number one best-selling book, Conscious Love, Enlightened Relationships and Soulful Sex, and her effective Happy Relationship Success System, she can help you to have the power to create your own happy, amazing relationship. So I love that reminder that we have the power to create what we want, because I do think, Deborah, sometimes we can lose track of that in the mix of all of this, right?
Yes, very true, Michelle. I think that's why I love that word create. I know that's what I've done for myself, and I do. We so often get lost in some of that, the victim and the blame and the all of that. But the truth is, when you really know yourself, when you know what your needs are, when you know how to effectively communicate, all of those things are part of what can you get to have the power in creating the kind of relationships you want. And so often relationships, you know, when you don't know all that stuff, relationships feel so out of your control, but they don't have to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So before we get into the main body of content here, I wonder, Deborah, if you wouldn't mind, just because I think a lot of women will relate to it and appreciate what you have to share, if you wouldn't mind sharing just a little bit more about your personal story and how you've gained greater wisdom on this path.
Yes. Sure. So as a kind of, you read, Michelle, in my little short bio, is I had a relationship, or, you know, earlier on in my life, I had several relationships, and I'm pretty sure that many, many of you out there can relate to it, but just those relationships that never, ever worked, and you couldn't quite figure out why. You didn't, you know, it was about what they were doing. It was about, well, what do I need to do differently? Do I need to try harder? All of those, that was certainly in all of my relationships earlier on in my life. And of course, the culminating relationship that's really sent me in the direction to become a therapist, believe it or not, was this relationship with a gentleman that had an addiction problem. And I kept getting, you know, going up and up to the, you know, worse and worse relationships. I was going the wrong direction. So this relationship definitely was the, you know, the worst relationship. He had a pretty severe addiction problem. I really didn't, I ignored all those red flags, which I know we all do often, and just kept trying harder. And, you know, some of my little core needs in there were like, well, if I do this, he'll just finally love me, or he'll finally pay attention to me. And so I just kept working and working and working at it. But of course, with somebody who has an addiction problem, nothing ever really works. So, you know, in my bio, I talk about my 30th birthday, which that in and of itself was kind of sad. But I basically, I was all dressed up. He was supposed to take me out. I was ready to go. And he never showed up. I knew the local place that the bar that he hung out. So I went there, and sure enough, his little red truck was there. And I went in, and I was so upset and talked, you know, and he's like, oh, I'm going to stay here tonight. So that was definitely like the first step of what the heck am I doing to myself? Why am I putting up with this? And I'm pretty sure that many of your viewers out there, many of your people out there that are listening have asked that question before. Michelle, I don't know, have you asked that question of yourself?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think most of us have. And, you know, the funny thing is, you would think that that would have been enough, but no, I had to learn my lesson a little bit more. So I did not break up with him at that point, which, you know, I go back and I'm like, oh, what was I thinking? But what ended up happening that was kind of finally my final straw was I actually had borrowed a VCR from my dad because there was something on TV I wanted to record. And one morning I was getting up and going out to the front room, and lo and behold, the VCR was missing. Oh. And yeah, and sadly, it wasn't the first time that he had actually stolen from me to get money for his drugs. So I'm frantically calling him, like, well, what, you know, where are you? Where's my VCR? It's dad's. And I'm just in my mind, I'm thinking, I'd have to tell my dad, you know, and I don't know, you know, this is really sharing vulnerability here. And I don't know if any of you guys have ever done this out there, but this was not the boyfriend I took around to my family. So my family didn't even know that I was dating this guy. So anyway, so, you know, bottom line was I was not able to recover the VCR, and I was left with having to tell my dad about the situation. And I got my courage up, called my dad, set up a dinner to meet with him and my stepmom. And basically I just said, you know, Dad, I've been dating this guy, and he has an addiction problem, and he stole your VCR, and I'm so sorry. And I handed, here's the money to pay for the VCR. And my dad just lovingly looked at me and said, keep your money. and then we went on with the dinner. We didn't talk a whole lot about it. And at the end, my dad just gave me a huge bear hug and said he loved me. And I left. But on my way home, I know. On my way home that night, I'm just like, what am I doing here? This is absolutely ridiculous. And it was pretty much at that point that I'm like, I am not going to be doing this to myself. I am not going to settle anymore when it comes to relationships. I am going to figure out this relationship stuff. And that's what had sent me. I went to school to become a marriage family therapist, you know, probably just as much to figure this out and fix myself. But I went to school and got into my own therapy. And that was kind of the process for me to get here. And then, you know, 20 years later, I have just had the delight of coming alongside many, many women, you know, struggling to get in relationships, to understand why they keep choosing the type of man they choose, and really help them to understand, you know, what's going on inside of them and what are the tools they need to better choose and then create the relationships that they want. So that's just my story.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. And you know what? I think, Deborah, a lot of us that are involved in this work in the world have found our way through our own struggles. I know I have. I often say,
absolutely,
I've shot myself in the foot so many times, it's a wonder I can walk.
I
too look back on some relationships that I was in when I was single, one in particular, and think,
oh, yeah,
what in the world? How in the world did I ever get involved in that in the first place? and saying it because I had, you know, the red flags waving in the wind as well. And
Oh, yes.
I can remember one of my clients once saying, and I love this, you know, we were talking about her disaster relationship that she'd had.
Yes.
And, you know, we were talking about red flags, and she said, yeah, there were more red flags than in the Chinese Communist parade.
I like that. That's beautiful.
Which I thought,
yeah, we're very good at ignoring those sometimes, aren't we?
We are. And I think that segues nicely into our topic today, because obviously one of the things that can cause conflict is if we're not fully aware of whatever agreement we're getting into, or we're unconsciously getting ourselves involved with the wrong person, or we're not consciously in that place of choice that you're talking about. So, you know, specifically as we talk today, Deborah, you know, I want us to focus this conversation as much as possible as far as between men and women, because obviously the women here are really seeking to have a deeper understanding on how they can have better relationships, connection, and less conflict, obviously, with men, right?
Yes.
So just begin there and tell us a little bit about, you know, why you feel like this topic is so important, and how, you know, you feel like we can begin to understand this more deeply so that we can have these deeper connections.
Yeah. You know, here's the bottom line. Conflict happens. I mean, conflict is that I have my need, you have your need, and they don't match, right? And that's a place that then it is so easy to end up doing this with each other.
Right.
So conflict is going to happen. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person or he's a bad person. It just means power struggles and conflicts happen when we are in relationship with each other. And the problem that so often happens is, I mean, first of all, nobody ever teaches us this or how to handle it. We kind of just go with whatever is role modeled to us. So depending on how our family, our parents handled, you know, or the primary caregivers in our life handled conflict, that's all we know how to do. The problem is conflict is, because it is going to happen, conflict basically what we don't know how to handle, what ends up happening is it creates more disconnection. Because we don't know how to say what we really mean. We say it in ways that are more hurtful. And, you know, we both have good intent in trying to figure out, okay, this is what I'm needing and how to talk through it. But that intent doesn't come out in how we really are able to express it. And so to me, learning and knowing that actually conflict can be the exact thing that can bring you together. And that's why this is so important to me. And in the book that was in my bio, The Conscious Love, Enlightened Relationships and Soulful Sex, I'm a co-author in that book. And this is my chapter in that book, which is basically about being able to turn conflict into connection, because that's what we all want. When there's conflict, we want to be seen, we want to be, you know, understood, we want to connect, but we don't know how, so we actually do more damage. Mm-hmm. That's why this is such an important topic to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there really are practical things we can do to actually connect, but you got to know what those are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you bring up something really important here, because I think we have a perception of conflict as being all bad.
Yes.
Just the mere word, it feels scary, right?
Yes, yes.
And yet you're going to help us to navigate that, recognizing that anytime you have more than one person, there's going to be more than one set of needs and more than one opinion. And, you know, these darn men, they sometimes don't realize that we're right about everything, right?
Darn. Yes, very true.
I know my husband, bless his heart, has the nerve to have his own mind on things. So
how rude.
I know. Can you see how enlightened I am?
Yeah.
So, tell us a little bit. I know you've perhaps already touched on this a little bit, but tell us a little bit about how you used to handle conflict in your own relationships in life. And perhaps you can segue into how you've learned to handle it so that it's more effective.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So obviously, you know, just by my story that I started out with, it's you know, maybe somewhat obvious to you guys, but I definitely was a typical avoider. You know, I'm a therapist, right? I'm a relationship coach. I'm a people pleaser, you know, way down inside of me. And so obviously to me, conflict was something that you just needed to avoid. So that's what I did. I did not really express what was going on with me. I built up resentment. I definitely was an avoider. You know, it's kind of interesting. There is kind of two different ways in general that people respond to conflict. And it's very, very ingrained from a very young childhood. And there's what's called kind of like a people that pull into themselves. They constrict in. And that's definitely the avoider. It's like I'm pulling. I don't know how to handle these big emotions, so I'm just going to pull in and kind of shut down and maybe disconnect. Those kind of different things. I'm going to pull in. That's one type. The other type are the, you know, kind of the woo, exploders who just everything goes out. There's not a right or wrong. And for, you know, as human beings, we can do both depending. I know sometimes when my resentments build up enough, then I'll explode out. But we have a general tendency to be one or the other more often when it comes to, you know, conflict and stress. And you just want to be aware of what is your tendency. And if you're a constrictor, your job is to actually speak up. Your job is to actually stay connected and speak up. Now, we'll be talking about how you do that well, so it's effective. But basically, if you're a constrictor and you pull in, your job is to actually share your feelings and speak up. If you're an exploder, your first job is actually to stop and to do more listening. So for me, I was definitely a constrictor. I definitely avoided conflict. Inside of me, there's still a part of that likes to do that, but I've just learned what I need to so that I can actually, you know, be more self-assertive and express myself, which makes things so much better in relationships and during conflict.
Yeah. So Deborah, I want to ask you about this because I don't know the answer to this. And there may be some women out there wondering. My perception is, and I know, you know, we're speaking in broad general terms here, but my perception is that many women might be the constrictor, the constrictor mode. And then I think there's a perception that a lot of men are in that explosive kind of mode. Maybe that's not true. You know, maybe, and like you said, we have some of both in us, perhaps we have the potential to do both. Mm-hmm. I know that my style has been to constrict and to withdraw. Mm-hmm. And it's something that absolutely drives my husband crazy when I do that. And yes. So, you know, I, like everyone else, I'm learning how to more effectively handle this in the context of a relationship with when something comes up. So
right.
Would you say that a lot of women tend to be constrictors and a lot of men tend to be more expressive, or is that just kind of a stereotype that somehow I have in my head?
Yeah, you know, over the years that I've been a therapist, 20 plus years, and relationship coach, honestly, I don't know. That would be an interesting like research to do to see the percentages, but I have definitely known many women that are more the exploders and the men just kind of like go into themselves. So I actually think it's, you know, really if we get to it, it has more to do with when we were children, what was the safest way to respond? So that's really what, where that comes from. So, and then we look at the same sex parent or same sex caregiver and what did they do? That's how we learn how to do that too. But it really becomes about kind of, I know it sounds funny, but safety. It, from a child's perspective. So if it was safer for me, if there was big emotions going on around me and it was safer for me to pull in, then that's what became part of me and is inside of me. If there was conflict or stuff going on around me, but the only way I could be seen or whatever else, and part of it is personality piece, is for me to, you know, yell and make a big thing, then that's what I would tend to do. So I, you know, I don't know statistically what it is, but I have definitely seen both.
Yeah, I was just curious about that. And you may have touched on this already somewhat, but what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that people tend to make when it comes to conflict?
Yeah, so... You know, the biggest mistakes that I see, and we have touched a little bit on, but the number one is that we avoid it. We don't address it. And that doesn't, you know, whether we're an exploder or a constrictor or anything, the truth is, and we were just talking about this, right? You see a red flag. I'm not saying you have to address every single red flag, but if you see a red flag, if something happens when you are even dating somebody, and especially early on, I talk about this all the time, and Michelle, I think we've talked about this in past interviews, but early on, you want to pay attention to those red flags. And if something about what they said or did makes you feel uncomfortable, you want to address it. Do not avoid it. Do not think, oh, but he won't like me, or, you know, then he won't want to go out with me anymore or anything like that. Because what you're starting at a very early stage in the relationship is that you lose your voice. And the problem is then that's going to continue to be the pattern. So the number one mistake is avoiding. Do not avoid when there's something there. You want to be able to express it. And I will be getting to this, but there is a very, very important little number one trick, little kind of antidote that we'll talk about to be able to do this and do this in a way that is more comfortable. But don't avoid is the number one. The number two is that you just get so caught up in your feelings and your thoughts, and you believe that what you're thinking and what you're feeling is absolutely right, and just, you know, blow that out there and just say it, right? It's like, you know, somehow he came late for one of the dates, or he did, you know, whatever it is, he forgot that this was your 1 month anniversary. I don't know, you know, whatever it is, but you in your mind goes, and this is, you know, part of how our minds work and everything else, but you in your mind just think, he doesn't even care about me. What kind of man is he? You know, and just all this different stuff. And then he walks in the door and you just go, blah, about all of it.
Right.
So that's the other one, you know, that you believe that your thoughts and your feelings are right. And you know what? That's the whole point about conflict, is that there are two perspectives. There are two different things that are going on. And if you just dump out yours as though yours is right, you've basically just started the conflict, right?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, in fact, one of my favorite books of all time is Stephen R. Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And yeah. I think there's so many gems in there, but I love the teaching that he has, which is seek first to understand and then to be good.
Yes, yes.
That's along with what you're talking about here, because we can become so convinced that our perception of reality is the only true.
Yes,
when you look at something, that it makes it almost impossible for us to consider there might be another point of view. And I've discovered this, I've experienced this with my husband, where I've been so convinced, like, that my perception, my truth is the one and only truth. And then he'll express himself and I'll go, wow, he is.
There's a whole other picture here. He's
really got a good point.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. So, and then the third one is that, you know, once you jump into it, you basically go right to a criticism. And it's kind of what you were just saying. My perspective is right. My feelings are right. So that means yours are wrong. And I am going to, you know, I'm going to do this to you, right? I'm going to criticize and, you know, say it, what ends up being, you know, mean, hurtful things to the other person. Judge where we judge and define the other person in the way that we speak. And those are the three biggest mistakes that I find people make time and time again.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those are very valuable. Yeah. And thank you for sharing those. So I want to talk a little bit more about the criticism piece.
Yes.
How we navigate that, the antidote, if you will, to criticism. Yes. How do we navigate that?
Yes. So this is so important. And you know what? I know everybody out there has heard this and knows this, but we don't do it. And that basically is, you know, like our number one trick when it comes to conflict, when it comes to criticism, because that's what we do. It's conflict, criticism, you know, that's what we do. And then it's the fight. So the antidote is I statements. And I know we all know this. I know we know it, but we don't do it. So let's talk a little bit about what we tend to do. We think we're saying an I statement when we go, I feel you are lazy. That is not an I statement. Right?
I like that.
And sometimes we'll even get really creative and we'll go, I feel disappointed and hurt because you're lazy and you didn't do the dishes while I was gone, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that we'll even get in an eye of feelings in there. Mm-hmm. So, but the second that we use the, you know, any kind of the you part of it to define, because the definition of their behaviors, the interpretation of their behaviors is inside our head. We do not know what was their perspective. We do not know what is going on for them. But if we just jump right in, you know, I had to work hard today. You were home all day and the dishes aren't even done. And we could take any simple, you know, comment like that. Or if you're dating and, you know, you're a half an hour late and you didn't text and you didn't call. And I just jump in. Now, I mean, that's a red flag in dating, but you got to slow it down, right? Mm-hmm. But I statements are basically what you want to do right away. So I'm going to talk about kind of the formula for an I statement. Again, I know everybody knows it, but the formula for the I statement. And then Michelle, if you're willing, I'd love to just have a little scenario with you and have you practice an I statement. So that way all the listeners can do that too.
Oh, I hope I don't flunk the test.
No. All right. So if I had a little piece of paper, I'd write this so I could help. But basically an I statement, you start with I feel or I felt. And you actually give your feelings. We are not taught, very seldom in our families are we taught to actually identify what we feel. When I work with my clients that I work with, I often have them pay attention to the various feelings in their body and where they're at in their body, because we actually feel our feelings in different places in our body, the different feelings, so that you can start to pay attention to that. And then when we'll talk about this, the gift that I'll be giving away, I've created this beautiful, wonderful whole list of feelings, words, so that you have to help support you. But basically it's a feeling. So I feel disappointed. I feel sad. I feel hurt. I feel lonely. I feel betrayed, or I felt. So you start with those. Think about the situation and how you felt in the situation. So I feel or I felt when you, now here's the trick, and that's why I kind of talked about what not to do, It's when you, and you just describe the behaviors factually. So you are not describing your interpretation or definition or what the behaviors were. You're just describing the, it's, you know, the behaviors factually. You know, so I'll use the this being home all day and not doing the dishes. So I feel disappointed and I feel frustrated. When you were home today while I was at work and the dishes didn't get done. He can't argue with that, right? If I say, kind of like what I said, you know, I feel frustrated that you're so lazy and you didn't even do the dishes, that I've just now started, basically our brain goes on the defense and now we've started a fight. But if I say I feel frustrated, I feel disappointed when you were home today while I was at work and you didn't do the dishes, it's a fact, right? So you want to just describe the fact, the behaviors in a factual way. No interpretations, no definition of what that behavior meant. Then you can add because, okay? So in this situation, I would say because I am tired and I know that I sometimes feel like I end up always being the one doing the dishes, and that builds resentment inside of me. And I really want us to be more of a team in doing the things around the house. So now that because is about my, I'm starting to put out my perspective, my how, you know, kind of what my thoughts are, but not defining negatively him, but my perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So because, and then I can describe my perspective, being very careful. Sometimes you can say, it seems like you may not care about, you know, how I'm feeling or what's important to me, but you're very careful with it seems. It's not, and you don't even care, right? So you're very, very careful. So because describes the kind of the reasoning from my perspective. And then the final part is what I want or what I need, you know, what I hope for. But then you're actually saying it, because people who care about us actually, you know, because they care about us, when we word it in these ways, they don't want us to feel that way. And they want to do things, but and especially I'll talk about this, there is a difference in how men and women think and communicate. So men are better off if you're very clear and specific about what it is that you want them to do. Yeah, I was working with someone this week, and it was so, her husband had something going on and that he was really anxious about. And because she cared about him, she actually was anxious the whole day, wondering how that was going. And so she said to him, let me know. She asked me, she said, I mean, what you would think is just a simple thing. She said, so let me know how it goes. That was what she said to him. Well, About an hour after she knew the time it was going to be over, or an hour and a half after, he texted her and he said, all is well. But she was mad because she had been anxious all day long and she wanted to know how it really went and how he was. And she wanted to know right away, as soon as this event was over with. And so when we were talking, I'm kind of like, well, you said that you wanted him to let you know how it went. And he did. And that's the difference between men and women. You know, women, we definitely want all the details and we want it right away. And so she was mad because she'd been anxious for hours and even a couple hours after the event was over, waiting to hear from him. But so it's being very specific. So we talked about, okay, so what was it that you really wanted? What was it that you really needed? And what she really needed, and which she needed to communicate clearly to him, is I need you because I will be anxious wondering how this goes. I really need you to call me as soon as it's over with and let me know if you know how you are and what happened, and you know, let me know where things are standing. That's, and so she gave a specific time, you know, she gave what information she wanted. Men are going to be able to succeed much better when we are that clear. So does that kind of make sense? Women do this to men all the time, I just have to say.
Well, it not only makes sense, but I think a big piece here, a big layer, and I think this is perhaps one of the biggest sources of conflict that is not managed in a healthy way, is that we all come into relationships, dating, partnership, marriages, whatever, with expectations, right?
Yes.
And oftentimes, as women, we expect our men, because we're talking to women here, so yes, that's why we're directing our comments at women. This doesn't don't have responsibility, but yes, we oftentimes expect them to know and understand what our needs, our wants, our desires, and our expectations are, and yes, then we become upset and angry with them and blame them for not being good guessers. And in fact, in this series, I interviewed one man, and he just said, I'm not letting any big secret out of the bag here. Men are not good guessers.
No. Nope. Yeah.
So, you know, we in our minds, what can happen here is we think we have an agreement with someone. Like this woman, yes, you gave the example of, she yes, thought in her mind, okay, I've made an agreement with him that he's going to let me know how this went. Mm-hmm. She had an idea of what that was going to look like. And yes, then when he gave kind of a all is well response.
In a text, no matter, an hour or so after the event.
He was like, what do you mean all is well? This wasn't at all what I had in mind.
Yeah. And I've been here anxious the whole day. Yeah, that's exactly right. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. If we don't express clearly what our needs, what our wants, what our expectations are, you know, people are not mind readers. Men definitely are not mind readers. And I think there's a saying, and I actually don't even know who said it, but there's a saying that women treat men like incompetent women and men treat women like incompetent men, because we think the other person thinks the way we think, and that is not the case. So women, I mean, you know, if I said to you, as soon as this is over with, call, let me, or if I don't even say it, just let me know how it went. You know, you would like be calling me right away. We'd be chatting about all the details of it, because that's how women's minds work. We're very like spider webs. Everything's connected. You know, that's how we would work. That is not how men's minds work. You know, they're in that present space and moment.
Compartmentalized, right?
Yes, exactly. 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 Mm-hmm. So you have to be very clear and specific what it is, you know, what is the expectation or what it is you're wanting from them. So that's why, oh, that was a long explanation, but it's such an important explanation, especially for women and the difference between men and women. So the last piece is, and what I want or what I need, you know, what I want from you or what I need from you is, you know, when you are home on any day when I have to go to work, to at least do one chore around the house, or, you know, to do the dishes when you're home, you know, all day long. Yeah. So that's very clear and specific. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's an I statement.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is something we've all heard before, but I think it's really important to refute this and to model it.
I know it, because we don't do it.
If we don't do it, or if we do it, we might do it in the way you modeled originally, where it's not really effective.
No, it's not. And then it will not be effective, and it'll start a conflict. And this is why we avoid conflict, because we don't know how to do it. We put out, you know, our intent isn't to start a fight, right? Our intent is try to get what we're feeling and needing out. But because we don't do it in the ways that are effective, that are helpful, what ends up happening is when we criticize, and you need to think about it, this is how all of our brains work. The moment that we criticize someone and define someone with that you type of statement, it automatically puts the other person on the defense. And so then you've got criticism, defense, defense, criticism, you've just got that going back and forth. So the I statement is the way to, still speak to what's going on, but in a soft way that the other person can hear it. Okay.
Yeah. And a real distinction here, just to emphasize this, is we're making it about a behavior, or we're asking for something specific, rather than making it about the person and making them feel like they're attacked, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right, Michelle. So here, let's play.
Okay, I'll do my best.
So let's say that you have been dating somebody, it's only been about 5 or 6 dates, you guys are thinking it's going forward, but it's not all the way into a committed. And part of why I'm using this is because you've got to say something when you see the red flags, right? So you're basically dating somebody. On date 3, he showed up about a half an hour late, 45 minutes late. You were new in the dating. You didn't quite want to say anything right then. Now on date 5, you guys were supposed to meet at a location. You're sitting there at the location and it's now 30 minutes past and you're still sitting there and he finally shows up. So what would you say? So it's the I feel. So what's the feeling?
Okay, so first of all, I'd say, hi, Bill. Really nice to see you.
Yes.
I'm feeling just a little bit embarrassed. And I'm feeling just a little bit confused because I've been sitting here waiting, and I've noticed that a couple of times you've showed up late for our dates without giving me any notification or a heads up. And it makes me feel a little bit like you don't care about me. Mm-hmm. And yet I have a sense that things are going well otherwise. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to request from you is, if there's something going on that's going to create this kind of situation where you're going to be late again, if you could just give me some advance notice so I'm not sitting here alone and feeling a little bit embarrassed.
Nice. Yes.
Something you could do for me?
Yes, wonderful. And I like that you asked that at the end, because when we do put out our what I need or want, you want to put that out. Yeah. So basically what you just did is, and I'm so glad that you did it this way, because the formula, there is space to move some of them up one or down or whatever. So it's just the four elements that you want to have to the formula. So what you did was you started out with the I feel, right? Hey, Bill, I'm so glad you're here. I'm glad everything's okay. I just realize I'm feeling embarrassed and confused. So perfect. That's what I'm feeling. And then what you did was you moved the because up, which is perfectly fine. Because, and you just explained, because I'm sitting here by myself. And then you also talked about, and because there's been a couple times that I've noticed, and then you went into the behavior, right? That when you've come late or been late to our meeting time. So you describe the behavior. You didn't define him in any negative way. You describe the behavior. And then, you said, what I really need is for you to, to call ahead or let me know if there's anything that's going to cause you to be late, so that I'm not sitting here embarrassed. So you did, you were afraid you weren't going to do it, but you did it all. So that's exactly what you want to be able to say. Exactly what.
Well, that was fun, and it was a good practice. And I guess it's good to know we don't have to be perfect, but if we have this model and have these key elements, I think it can make a huge difference. Yes. In our overall success in communication.
Yeah.
And I also just wanted to emphasize one thing that you said to Deborah. I have found the word because to be a really magic word in making requests of my husband and men in general. I mean, it almost seems like I can make almost a nonsensical request. Not that I'm out to do that. Mm-hmm. But if I give a because reason as to why that would be important or mean something to me, then I find that more often than not, my husband is falling all over himself to do it. It just seems to be kind of a magic word to pivot into that. And it's almost like maybe to the man's logical mind, he's saying, oh, there's a reason why.
Just
a random request. There's a reason behind it.
Yeah. I mean, the because helps them to understand what's going on underneath for us. What's our perspective, how we're experiencing or feeling, you know, or interpreting the situation. So when you can do because, it just makes more sense. And I think for men, that is very helpful for them. You know, the other little magic, this is a plus, but the other little magic is when you're saying the and what I need or what I want is to be able to say, and it would help me so much, you know, if you would blah, 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 or it would, because men want to, it's when they have an understanding of the why, and then they really understand how it would, you know, positively impact you if you did whatever behavior, that is that men are going to definitely hear both of those really well. So,
Thank you for bringing that one up too. That was a couple of key magic words or phrases.
Yes.
So I know we've been having such a juicy discussion.
I know.
We haven't even actually got to
the four C's. That's okay. I can go over them quick. In some ways, the practicing the I statement is like so important. So the four C's, but I will also say they're very important elements. So the four C's, number one, calm. What I want you to keep in mind is you need to be in a calm state anytime you're going to be going into a conflict. And actually your partner does as well. So that's where we all know this. You take a time out. You may not address it right in the moment, especially if you're an exploder. You may take a time out and then you come back to it later. You need to be in a calm place. There's lots of different things to be able to do that. There's deep breathing. There's other things, but you definitely do not go into conflict if you are not in a calm place. So calm. Okay.
That one's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Because conflict will always end badly if you're not calm. You know, I mean, honestly, because you're going to say things that aren't what you mean to say, and it's going to end bad. So calm is the very first one. Curiosity is the second one. And just remember, and you said this earlier, Michelle, it's my perspective. I have my thoughts. I have my feelings. But you know what? The other person has their thoughts and their feelings. So when I can stay in a really curious place, then that is opening the door for better, deeper understanding and connection. So there's lots of, I'll just give you, one, but there's lots of different ways to make sure you're staying curious. But the most important and most helpful is to ask open-ended questions. And I'll give you a little best way to start any open-ended questions, especially when it's help me to understand. Help me to understand, what were you feeling? What was going on inside of you, and what were you feeling when this was happening? Help me to understand, what were some of the thoughts that, you know, led you to, you know, take the steps and the actions that you did? Help me to understand. That's like the best way to open it, because it's really, I want to understand. Again, that's why you have to be calm, because you have to be in the place, you know. And it doesn't mean that you are not going to be putting your perspective out there, but you want to, when you are curious and the other person starts to really feel heard and understood by you, then they are even going to be more willing to hear and understand you. So staying curious is the second one.
Yeah. And I think that also those are also magic words that a man can hear. Help me.
Yes.
As long as you're doing it in a calm way, so it doesn't come across as help me.
Yeah. No. That's why you have to be calm. Be calm first. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So calm, curiosity. The third one is compassion. And, the compassion and empathy are slightly different, but they're the same things. It's realizing, and they're different, but you bring all of those in because it's really that idea of you have your set of feelings and I can be empathetic. I can be compassionate towards your feelings. You know, like even in the scenario that you didn't do dishes all day long, and if I was able to have a good connection, I would have some understanding of, that whatever, he had just worked until midnight the night before, or he had been working really, really hard, and or maybe he did something else. But if I can have some compassion and understand, be curious, understand what's going on, then I can have some insight and empathy into what he is feeling, what's going on for him. And again, as human beings, when we can connect emotionally, that is, there's so much research and science now out there, neuroscience now, that really talks about emotional connection. Emotional connection is the best way to parent. And emotional connection is the best way in our relationships as well. So compassion and empathy. And then the last one is collaboration. And collaboration is really that let's work together. And here's my little, statement around collaboration. There's steps to problem solve, starting by using the I statements, saying what you want or need at the end. There's also some problem solving steps you can take if it's really a complicated problem solving. The bottom line around collaboration that I always talk about is keep in mind it is you and me against the problem. Because so often in conflict, we say it's you against me. And that becomes the win-lose. Somebody has to lose. But when it's you and me against this problem, this issue, this conflict, then we can create a win-win and we're working together. So those are the four C's.
Oh, I love those four C's. Those are fabulous. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
Very, very valuable in all of our relationships, in our romantic relationships, but in all of our relationships, this is so valuable. So thank you so much, Deborah, for sharing so generously.
I absolutely
love talking to you.
Thank you.
And I know you're just a well of wisdom. And so I do want to give the women to hear about your free gift.
Yes.
I know they're going to want to stay connected with you and your work.
Wonderful. Absolutely. So my free gift, it's a cheat sheet. So it's basically called Conflict to Connection Cheat Sheet. And what it literally is it is a step-by-step how to maneuver through conflict, okay? And you may not use this. You're just going to be practicing the I statements early on in a relationship. Once you're into a committed relationship, this is like the best way to be able to do this. Because really what it does is it gives very specific, steps on if you are the way I think about it is, when you're going into a conflict, you want to hear each other's perspectives. So you start with one person sharing and speaking to their perspective and the other person is listening. And then when that's done, you switch roles. What we tend to do in conversations is I talk and then I explain back and I talk and then I, and we don't really make sure that we're really connecting and understanding each other. So it is a more structured format, but it slows the process down, and it has very clear directions of if you're the person speaking and sharing your perspective, how do you do that, which includes I statements. It includes some statements of acknowledging and appreciating some of the things the person has done so that it's not that they're all bad. So it has specifics of what the person speaking shares, and then what the person listening does, which, is like summarizing what they're hearing. Because like you talked about, so often we say stuff and we think the other person is in agreement and understands, and that's not true. So it slows the process down. Then it's some steps on how to actually problem solve a little bit. And then, like I said, the other part of it has a nice, wonderful, long list of feeling words, because sometimes we need help getting our feeling words. So that is what it is. It's a cheat sheet to help you to move from being in conflict to being able to connect through the conflict.
Thank you, Deborah. And I want to let everyone know that you can get this wonderful free gift by clicking on the link right underneath Deborah's the audio or video that you're listening to this interview from. And it'll be available throughout the rest of the event, but be sure to get it now so you don't miss out. And Deborah, I want to have you have an opportunity to just leave us with a parting thought before we wrap up for today.
You know, I was thinking, you know, as we've kind of been talking about this, the parting thought is step into conflict. It doesn't have to be scary, especially when you go from the place that this is a place where I get to better understand this, my significant other. So, and I get to connect with them. So conflict really, truly can be a place of deeper connection. And hold that and work towards that, and it will be amazing.
Yeah, I love that perspective. If we know how to step into conflict, it's actually a channel for us to have deeper intimacy and to get a lot of our wants and needs met, and as well as to understand the wants and needs of whoever else we're in a relationship or a partnership with. So this has been a really valuable conversation, and Deborah, I thank you so much again for sharing so generously.
Yes, Michelle, you're very welcome. Thank you again for having me. It's always a delight to get to work with you, and it's just fun to get to share this information because I know it can make a difference in these women's lives. Like it has mine.
Thank you so much. And I also want to thank each of you for being here, because the fact that you're here is a compliment to you, that you're investing in your own time and energy into learning more so that you can have even happier and more effective relationships. And I also want to invite you to scroll down on the page or go to readyfortherightguy.com/VIP and check out the upgrade package. We have both a gold and a platinum package, both of which include all of the interview conversations and some really juicy bonuses. So check those out, because it can really give your love life a great jump start at the beginning of this new year. So thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you on more of Ready for the Right Guy. Bye-bye for now.